Good morning, good day, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It's Monday, August 12th, 2019, and I am your guest host, Brian Chaffin, sitting in for Kelly Gaumont, and with me today is the charming and lovable John Martellaro.
Aw, shucks. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, John. Good morning. And with me also is the lovely and talented Andrew Orr.
Hey, hey, good to be here.
Thank you kindly, Andrew. All right, so today we have, a couple of fun things to talk about. We're also sponsored by the Omni Group. I'm going to tell you all about OmniFocus for iOS a little bit later. And let's see here. John, you recently wrote about the possibility of a foldable iPad. Am I getting this correct?
Yeah, I was inspired by a Boy Genius Report article by Chris Smith on August 7th. Apple's first foldable device could land in 2020, but might not be an iPhone. And all of a sudden, a bolt of lightning went through my head, and I went, you know, we're having all these problems with foldable phones. They don't seem to be solving a problem that we need solved. But a foldable iPad, and there's a nice artist rendition of what a foldable iPad might look like in Chris's article, would be perhaps a new product category, perhaps a new wave of iPads. And it seems to make sense from a technical perspective and a price perspective. So I linked to it in Friday's Particle Debris, and I hope that the readers had a chance to check that out and ponder the idea of a foldable iPad, which does solve some problems.
Doesn't really.
Well, let's look at the phone, for example. How do you? A phone is designed to be held in your hand. That's its legacy. That's its origin. And you slide your fingers across it to activate it. Suddenly, a foldable iPhone or a foldable smartphone of any kind almost demands that you hold it in one hand like a calculator and touch it with the other hand, which some people aren't accustomed to doing, especially our friend Kelly, who's notably vocal about that. Second, these Galaxy Folds are supposed to be in the $2,500 range, and there's been a lot of pushback lately against a $1,000 phone. So using exotic technology and a device that people are already spending a painful amount of money on is perhaps not the way to go until the technology matures. The other thing I thought about is that I don't think these foldable phones are the same thickness on the same side, on both sides, are they? Is there a fold-out plane and a body and a body?
The ones that we've seen so far,
are they symmetrical?
They don't close when they're folded. They don't touch.
Yeah, but are both sides symmetric in that they're equally thick?
Oh, I don't know.
It just occurred to me that if you have one side that it's not as thick as the other, you might not be able to put a battery in there. So you're having twice as much power consumption with only the same size battery.
Well, Apple does excel at filling every nook and cranny with batteries in ways that no other company's been able to do.
Yeah, but you got to connect the two batteries.
Yeah. But I'm going to come back to my central point here, which is, what does a foldable iPad solve? Either.
A foldable iPad is already designed to be held by both hands or held by one, cradled with one hand and operated with the other. And so because you're not trying to operate the iPad with your stretched thumb or your stretched forefinger, it's a natural thing to hold it. And if you're going to hold it, you might as well hold something that's big when you use it and tidy when you put it away.
Why?
Yeah.
More screen real estate.
But no, but like who has ever owned an iPad and said, yeah, this would be great if only it was like a little bit smaller when I was carrying it.
Everybody who travels with a briefcase.
You're arguing with why it is that I shouldn't mind an iPad. My question is, what problem does it solve?
So when I was thinking about this, because I think a foldable iPad makes more sense than a foldable iPhone, and when I thought about what problems could be solved with that, like what if maybe you want an iPad mini size device for when you're reading a book, for example, and then if you're ready to create something or do work on it, you could just unfold it to have that bigger screen.
There you go.
I'm going to call nonsense on that from the standpoint of the mass doesn't go away. So, like, when you want that smaller iPad to read with, say, something, you know, akin to the iPad mini form factor, right? If you're doing that, if you're getting that form factor via something that folds, you still have that mass. And the mass is part of why some people prefer to read on a smaller device in the first place.
Also, to read it as a book, you'd have to fold it around backwards on itself instead of clamshell close.
Yeah.
That might be a problem. I can see it'd be a stretch, pardon the pun.
I mean, mind you, like if Apple brings a product like this to market, I have no doubt that it will be elegant in a way that Samsung could only dream of, and that it will approach the challenges of the form factor in ways again that Samsung could only, you know, dream and hope to rip off. But I don't see the problem that having a foldable iPad solves. Whereas at the very least, a foldable phone folds up smaller for your pocket.
You know, that the concept photo in the Boy Genius Report article suggests that it might be fun to have the keyboard on a flat area separate from the display at the top. When you do bring up a keyboard, your hands are resting comfortably on it, assuming that the ergonomics is done correctly, rather than holding the iPad with one hand and typing or trying to prop it up so you can use two hands. And having the plane of the keyboard and the plane of the display is something we're not really accustomed to, even after 9 years on an iPad. Well, I know I'm not directly accustomed to it.
So, but is that actually a foldable iPad? Like, in other words, could you still open up that device and have it be all screen for all consumption?
Well, that's what the concept photo suggests. In those cases where you don't have a keyboard on the display, yeah, you've got a very large vertical display. That's another thing that might help, is reading web pages.
Yeah, whatever, man. Listen, to be fair, these concept photos also show a device that's about four times thicker than an iPad. So,
yeah, you know, I know, just that. It looked like a black MacBook. I don't know. Maybe that was just an artifact of the photoshopping of the concept. I don't know why they did it that way.
Sorry about the road noise coming from my end, folks. I don't know. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying the need. I just don't see the problem that foldable devices are solving. Okay, I see that I have gotten both of you to agree with me. I appreciate it, and I accept your apologies.
But we're trying to think of a way to gracefully reiterate our strong arguments without annoying you.
Annoy me all you want. If I'm wrong, annoy me. I'm trying not to be, like, you know, change resistant to this. I'm trying not to be that sort of, you know, reactionary Apple fan that.
Well, let me give you another example. I have a 12.9 inch iPad Pro, the first model. And in a case, it's pretty good size and it's pretty healthy, heavy. But the 12.9 inch screen is glorious. I think I would be interested in a 11 inch iPad that folded and was easy to carry around and wasn't so susceptible to damage, because that's a big piece of glass that things can fall on and drop on, or that you might bang and damage. And having it closed when it's not in use without necessarily having to buy a expensive protection pad around the outside that adds extra weight might seem pretty comfortable and solve a problem.
I've got an 11-inch iPad. Works pretty well for what that's worth. There's just so many problems with a foldable screen. You know, we saw those with the Samsung device in the first place. And admittedly, if Apple brought, again, I want to stress this, if Apple brought this product to market, I'm sure it would be a million times better than Samsung's garbage. But, like, just having a display that can fold, I mean, it seems like we're talking about needing fundamentally different display technologies to even hope to make that happen.
Fundamentally different? I'm not following you.
Well, the hinge.
Well, if the hinge is done right, it just glides. The image just glides through the hinge.
No, but now you need foldable glass or foldable something for the display. We've seen articles about
special glass that can fold to a certain radius. And that's why an iPad might make sense, because it's bigger and the radius of curvature of the fold might not have to be so severe.
All right, John, you and I have a long history of dinners and dinner bets. And I have no idea who, like, you know, one of us, I'm pretty sure, like,
I think I owe you.
I don't remember. But so let's just add this to it. I say no foldable iPad in 2020.
Well, I didn't take the position that there would appear in 2020. I simply quoted the article from BGR. Okay,
all right. Very good on your part, because that was a sucker bet.
You're constructing an artificial stance.
That was a sucker bet.
I'm not falling for that.
Well, good for you. All right. Well, so here's something else you shouldn't – actually, maybe you should fall for, because I love this company, the Omni Group. They make fantastic software, and I cannot emphasize that enough. I'm delighted that they're sponsoring the show. And specifically, we're talking today about OmniFocus for iOS. Now, OmniFocus is a professional to-do list manager that helps you, as its tagline says, accomplish more every day. With OmniFocus, you can have lower stress because OmniFocus remembers everything for you. There's better planning because OmniFocus makes planning and reviewing easy. Get your work done on time because OmniFocus tells you what you need to do next. Now, OmniFocus for iOS runs on iPhone and iPad. It's a universal app. It includes basics such as actions, projects, flagging, due dates, notes, and batch editing, that sort of thing. You can also add tags for a second layer of organization. There's a forecast view, helps you plan the next few days. It's like, this is a product I really like. Seems like it could be very transformational for my own personal and professional life. There's a flag view for seeing all the items that you flagged. You can review, you can periodically go through your projects and make sure your plans are all up to date so that nothing slips by. Notifications remind you when something is coming up so you don't have to keep checking the app, right? And it even includes an app for Apple Watch, and there's a pro version too, which includes lots of customization, especially custom perspectives, which are easy to make, which let you see your data the way you want to. And it syncs with OmniFocus for Mac and OmniFocus for the web. And to learn more, all you have to do, dear listener, is go to OmniFocus.com. You can get the app there. You can learn more about it. You can see some screenshots, see some videos. This is a great company. OmniFocus is a fantastic app, and you should absolutely and positively check out OmniFocus for iOS. Andrew, you put together a list of things for college students going back to school or starting school up.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a list of five things for college students, and because they're college students, I wanted to find some affordable products. Ooh, and I think smart. I rounded up some good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did, as a matter of fact. That's why we're talking about it today.
So the first one is this. I've reviewed this and talked about it before, or at least mentioned it. It's this new prepaid carrier called Visible, and they go through Verizon's network. The reason I like them is because I've used other prepaid carriers before, like Net10, but they don't really have enough data. Like, you get 4 gigabytes of data, I think, for $35. Mm. Whereas with Visible, you get unlimited everything for $40 a month. Mm. So that's a much better deal. And in the past, they did have this speed cap, but this summer they announced that they removed that, at least for the time being. So that's another good aspect of it.
All right. And is this a prepaid service?
Yep.
Got it. Okay.
So the second one on my list, I did recommend the Apple Card, specifically because if you're a young person, you might not have good credit unless your parents set you up with a credit card as a teenager. So you got to build that credit up. And there was some news last week, I think it was, that Goldman Sachs has been accepting applicants who don't have a very good credit score. So I thought that might be a good idea for college students.
That is an interesting call. I mean, but one aspect that you don't mention is that for college students who are doing things like Apple Music and maybe some of the other subscription services that Apple is doing, let alone their in-app purchases or their games or anything like that they're getting from the App Store, is, you know, if you're doing that and you can get that 3% off, 3% mm-hmm. back, that could be meaningful if those costs in the first place are a meaningful part of your monthly outlay. And for a college student, that could be the case.
Yeah, that's definitely a good benefit. If you,
and don't you have to be 18?
Apple stuff frequently.
Don't you have to be 18, Andrew?
Yeah, I think you do.
I'm actually not sure.
If you're a 17-year-old freshman, you might want to.
How many 17-year-old freshmen are there?
Smart ones like you. And Andrew.
No, I wasn't a 17-year-old freshman.
That ship sailed a long time ago, John. Maybe smart ones like you. Regardless, I don't know what the age limits are. Actually, Andrew, why don't you find that out for us?
Yeah, I should.
Yeah, it'd be a very good tip. So that's an interesting recommendation for a college student, one that I wasn't expecting when I read your article, so rock on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so another one, it's this little device called Tile. So it's a Bluetooth tracker, and it gets kind of expensive if you buy, like, packs of three or multi-packs, whatever number they had. But I think it was $30 for a single one. And it's nice, I think, because you can stick this on anything you want and you can track your thing from your phone. So I thought, well, maybe you have roommates and you're worried that they might, you know, steal stuff from you. So maybe you could stick a Tile on this and be able to track it.
In college, it's called borrowing.
Okay, borrowing.
Go ahead. Sorry. Just
like Hawkeye Pierce said, it's not stealing. It's still right here in my tent.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andrew doesn't know who Hawkeye Pierce is, John.
Oh.
All right. Anyway, it's a subject for another time. Go ahead.
And then, I mean, that's pretty much it with that device. That's just, like, with each thing, I'm trying to have some type of college use case in mind.
Yeah.
So I thought, maybe that would
be
helpful.
Yeah, keeping track of your stuff seems like a really good thing. And then, but you've got two other recs on that here, too. One practical and one that may be wishful thinking. The practical one being the PopSockets Pop Wallet.
Yeah. I thought that was cool. It's this little wallet that attaches to the back of your phone, and you can, you know, stick cash or credit cards in there.
And how
your
does
student
it
ID.
Is it like an actual sticker?
Kind of
sticker.
Well, see, with the pop sockets, I think that sticks with suction.
Oh.
And it looks like maybe the wallet would stick the same way.
Okay. That's interesting.
So that one, yeah, that one was only $20.
And then how about the wishful thinking one?
Now, this is an important one, I feel, for college students, is a cookbook. You need to learn how to cook. It's eating is essential, and you might as well be good at how to eat, cooking. Like, you don't want to be like me, who at one point in the beginning, I survived on animal crackers for a couple days in college.
Solid. Excellent. Yeah.
Or maybe you're going to do like the stereotypical, you just eat ramen, which ramen is nice, but you don't want to have a ramen-only diet. So that's why I'm suggesting a cookbook, because cooking by yourself with food you get at the grocery store is a lot more affordable than eating out all the time at a restaurant or fast food. Yeah,
it's healthier. This particular book, it's called the College Cookbook, is aimed at getting kids who don't, or young people who don't know how to cook, actually cooking.
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent. That's good. All right. Those are good recommendations, Andrew. We have a link.
Thanks.
Link to your article in the show notes. John, do you have some recommendations from your college days? Does it involve, like, you know, Star Trek and slide rules?
Yeah, I do have one recommendation.
Yeah.
Have a girlfriend. You'll eat out more and eat better.
That's excellent advice. Excellent advice, John Martellaro. Thank you very much. Did you have a slide rule in college?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Of course you did.
Of course.
Oh, my God. That makes me feel so delightful.
And mine
so delightful.
Was a cool one. It was circular.
Wow. A circular slide rule. And yet you still had a girlfriend.
Huh. That too.
Who knew? Who knew that these things were possible? All right. On that happy note, John, you know very much that I love you, and all I can see in my head right now is you sitting on the edge of your bed with the poster of Spock behind you.
Well, you know, there is that.
That's one of my favorite photographs of you. Was that a college dorm room or a?
Yes, it was. It was a college dorm room. We had a picture of Spock with a giant sized picture of Spock, and my roommates and I were both astrophysics majors. So of course we adored Mr. Spock.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
Nice.
Of course you did. All right. Well, I want to thank you both very much for joining us.
Good to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Indeed. I want to thank the Omni Group for sponsoring the show, OmniFocus for iOS. Go to the omnifocus.com to learn more about it. And on that happy note,